Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Developer Express. Become a UI superhero with DevExpress, controls, and libraries. Deliver elegant .NET solutions that address customer needs today by leveraging your existing knowledge. You can build next-generation touch-enabled solutions for tomorrow. You can download your free 30-day trial at dx.hanselminutes.com. That's dx.hanselminutes.com. Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and today I'm talking with Ryan Buckley. She is the co-founder and CEO at FitCode. This is a company that helps women of all shapes and sizes shop with confidence using technology to make it happen. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Scott?
I'm very well. Thanks for chatting with me today. You've got an interesting product here, and it seems like it's going to disrupt an industry that I don't think is particularly technologically savvy. I don't think of the fashion industry as being at the forefront of tech.
Yeah, you know, we couldn't agree more. It's an interesting place to be in this this beautiful fashion tech space. And what we're trying to do is just bring technology to an industry that could really use it. So, you know, we've all heard about where retail is at right now. And our goal is to make the whole process of online shopping easier and more transparent and more successful for customers and the retailers. So it's a really exciting time to be in the space.
When I think of the technology that I have used in retail, I used to work at a company called 800.com and we sold DVDs. So it's the same shopping cart we've been using for 15 years, the logout process. You know, we have things like Stripe, but for the most part, we scroll through pictures, some of which are nice pictures, some of which are not. We pick products, we try them out. And the most innovation I've seen is, you know, Zappos lets you return the shoes that don't fit. But there's not a lot going on. In fact, the only really interesting technology that I saw was at Amazon, where you could spin the model 360 degrees and see what the outfit looks like. But it sounds like you think that there's a bigger problem, and that's the fit of the clothing.
Yeah, you know, I think there are two big problems. One, it's that people want to shop online, and we're not making that easy for customers. There's obviously the fit problem too, but first things first, it's, you know, as a customer, you go onto a big online retailer or brand website, and you see hundreds to thousands of images of denim specifically, and customers don't know where to start. So since they don't have dressing rooms, and since it's all e-commerce now, they don't know what jeans to choose. And so that's where FitCode comes in. We say, hey, let's take all this noise out of the process. Take this quick quiz, and then we're going to narrow all this down for you and make it easier. From there, we, of course, focus on the fit, and that's the biggest issue right now is, you know, really getting these brands to make jeans that fit their customer base.
Mm-hmm. Is this primarily focused on women? Because as a man, I would very much like a 33, 34 pair of jeans, and I can't really find them in the store. Like, they're either too big or they're too tight.
Absolutely. So right now we just do women's denim, but we're actually going to be launching with men's this fall. So we're super excited to do that. So
So
be on the lookout. We will reach out and get you those size 33 jeans.
Okay. See, that's pretty cool. I like that. It would even be cooler if I could, like, I don't know, take a selfie and you could figure out what my shape is and fill the quiz out for me.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. You know, interestingly enough, Scott, when we were doing a bunch of this beta research when we were first founding this project, is that we realized that, you know, we started with women and we realized that while they need a technical solution, because we need to be able to integrate on these e-commerce sites, they don't want a really technical product. And I think that goes for men and women's. Yeah. So, you know, think about when you're shopping online. Most people are doing it while doing another activity. They're, you know, watching, for me, it's watching Real Housewives, you know, whatever you're watching, and you just want to sign on real quick, find the jeans that fit, and then get back to your daily, you know, activities.
Interesting. Okay. So you go in and ask these questions and they're pretty straightforward. And it's not complicated. It's 10 seconds. My wife went through it in 10 seconds, came up with a fit code. She has a number now, not a measurement, but a number that's 710. And encapsulated within that number is a lot of things, more than just your inseam and your waist.
Absolutely. So the fit codes are arbitrary three-digit numbers that represent a body shape. So within the fit code, there can be a whole range of sizes. And then, of course, there are all the jeans that map to that fit code. So we know all the measurements. We standardize them across brands. So we know how, you know, one brand fits against another, because we all know how it is. You can be, you know, a size 28 in one jean and a size 29 in another brand, and you just don't know what size to buy. So all of that data lives under the fit code.
Okay. So I've got this number, and then what do I do with it? Do I go over to search for that number, or does it know my profile and now it only shows me things that are the right fit?
Yeah. So it knows your profile. And when you press shop now after getting your fit code, you'll see that, you know, on a website like Joe's Jeans, who just integrated with us a couple weeks ago, you'll see that we actually do what we call badging. And so your fit code 710 icon is going to pop up on any of the jean images that are going to fit you. So now when you're, you know, searching through all of these product images, we make it really clear. We say, hey, here are the ones that are going to fit. And then once you open it, we tell you what size to buy in it. But for us, you know, we really come from a space of wanting to focus on fit, not size. So first things first, we have to make sure this jean flatters your body type, and then we can tell you what size to buy in it.
Okay, interesting. So Joe's Jeans is a partner. You are not Joe's Jeans. You're Fit Code. They integrate with you?
Exactly.
Okay. So then I take that code over there, and now that I know that, it's almost like my sleep number.
That's an awesome, I haven't heard that, but that is an awesome way to think about it.
Right, so, the sleep number bed, like that's become part of the ethos. We all know what that is. Now the fit code will become that as well.
Yeah, you know, that's our goal. We want people to someday wonder how they ever shopped without fit code. You know, how did you shop without someone coming in and telling you, hey, here are the products to buy and this is the size to buy it in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about technology. You've got this number that, and there's, I don't know how many combinations there are. I'm looking at your quiz there. There are probably hundreds of combinations.
There are quite a few, yes.
Yeah. So then you come up with this number, and your technology looks like it's JavaScript inside of thefitcode.com. How do I, if I'm a reseller of jeans, or if I'm a fashion brand, and I want to make sure that people with fit codes can come and find the right pants, how do I integrate?
Yeah, so our big thing is we want to make it really easy for these brands. So we know they have other businesses to attend to, and we want to make this technology integration super, super easy. So we just do JavaScript. We integrate straight on their front end, and then we control everything from there. So if you're on a Joe's Jeans website, what you do is you'll see a little button that says take your fit quiz, and then you can take the fit code quiz right on the Joe's Jeans website. And then you press shop now, and that whole experience is now personalized for you.
Oh, okay. So they don't even have to as Joe's Jeans doesn't have to implement anything. They're getting your quiz and that number built in automatically on their website.
Exactly. And you don't have to go to fitcode.com. So our whole thing is we want to leave the customers right on our partner website. So we don't want to pull them away for anything. We just want the customer to be able to stay right on the Joe's Jeans site and shop successfully right there.
That's interesting. Now, as someone who has a company that you're promoting and that you're talking about, though, doesn't by allowing them to integrate like that, doesn't that downplay the fit code site? Or are you trying to do that and you really want to make it about the brand that the person likes?
Yeah, we really want to make it about the brand. So when I first started Fit Code, we had fitcode.com, and that's really where we gathered our information. It was where we tested, and it's where we tried new things and, you know, were able to see if they worked or not. So fitcode.com is a place where customers can still go and you can shop across all sorts of brands. But we started realizing that, you know, the world doesn't need another marketplace. What they need is they need the experiences where they're comfortable, which is on a brand or retail website, just to be easier. So if we could figure out a way to do that, we could be successful, and that's why we switched to JavaScript.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So before you were doing something other than JavaScript?
Yeah, when we first started, we actually did a plugin, so a browser plugin. So the whole idea was that you could take your fit code shopping wherever you went. And again, we just realized that that was a bit too technical and we didn't need to do that. So let's just integrate right onto the partner website. Let's make it seamless. And that's been successful for us so far.
Interesting. Okay. So I'm here. While we're talking, I went over to joesjeans.com, which is one of the partner websites, and went looking, and there's a badge. It looks like a black circle with a stylized F and a C, and it says 710, which is the code number that my wife got. And it says here, perfect fit found. This style has been fit tested and approved for fit code 710. How are you measuring these? When I think of jeans, again, I think of waist and I think of inseam. Are you I don't know, finding 7-10 people and they all go try the pants on, or how is there something more technical behind it?
Yeah, you know, there is, there's definitely more technical answers behind that. But the big thing is our founding principle that you can have a bunch of women who wear the exact same size and they can be totally mm-hmm. different body shapes. So what we do to make sure that, you know, we're telling your wife that that's the right Joe's jeans for her is that we actually fit test all the jeans. So our partners send us their entire inventory. We have them in our office. It's awesome. It's, we call it the denim cave because we just have hundreds and hundreds of jeans. But what we do is we bring in women, all of the same size, but all different body shapes. And they try on every single pair of jeans. So we can see how that jean is going to fit across all body shapes. We then marry that to a beautiful technical process where we have all the measurements that are standardized and we know how these things are going to map to fit codes. And then that's how we spit out the recommendations for our customers.
I see. And the fit code is the secret sauce that I can know that if I have that number, then I'm going to get a pair of pants that fit me.
Exactly.
So you're talking about jeans right now, but it seems like this could scale to other things like, you know, shirts. I always have that trouble where I'm, if you've ever seen someone like a man wearing a shirt and you say, that's a medium, right?
Absolutely.
You know, or I'm in that awkward, like I need a medium that's not a large because a large is a poncho and a medium for me is this medium. This fit code could go to other clothing, couldn't it? Not just jeans.
Yeah, it absolutely could. So we're going to men's denim next just because that's what we've tested and we have built out. But then we have other apparel already built into the algorithm, so we can go there next year.
Very cool. Okay. So what is the back end? I understand, and this is a coincidence, by the way, I tend to work at Microsoft, but I understand that you have some Microsoft tools in the back end as well.
Yeah, so we collect a lot of data, and so we need to have pretty powerful tools to be able to look at that data and figure out what to do with it. So the biggest piece about the fit code data is we want to make sure everything's very actionable. So we're collecting data not only from our customers, but from our partner sites, so we know how customers are engaging in it, how they're converting, which is our biggest success metric. And then we need to be able to serve all this back to our partners in an actionable and insightful way.
Yeah. So you've got thousands of users, thousands of genes, thousands of measurements, and you're going to have to go and put all of that in the back end and manage all that data. That's
exactly.
Cool. Now I'm looking at your LinkedIn and it looks like you've been the CEO of FitCode for 3 years, but you were, or I assume that you, are you still a working model? It looks like you worked as a model for at least 8 years.
Yeah, I am still a working model. I'm taking less jobs now as this company has gotten busier and busier, but I still do shoot here and there.
Mm-hmm. Maybe very, very briefly, you could explain that term working model, because I have friends that are working models that do, you know, like I have a great friend who does Amazon shots so that when you look on Amazon and you see the clothing, that's my friend. And, but that's different than runway work. That's different than, print work, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was your friend for a few years. I shot Amazon when they were still located in Seattle. Their photo studio was based, in Seattle. Now it's not, but I shot for them, you know, Monday through Friday of most weeks. And so a working model, when we say that, it means that you're usually doing commercial work. So you're doing work for all these e-commerce companies, you know, for years. And one of the reasons why I started FitCode was I was those two legs you saw on Nordstrom.com. So all of those jeans, I was shooting them. Yeah. So I got this really unique behind the scenes experience and, you know, view of what's going wrong here. You know, what people are seeing in these e-commerce photos and what the companies are trying to sell, you know, they're just not lining up. So that's why, you know, I founded FitCode. But back to the working model piece, it really just means that, you know, it's our way, it's our bread and butter. It's our way of taking home money. And we don't just, you know, do runways here and there. It really is our full-time job.
Interesting. Okay. But it sounds like you have at least an understanding and an acknowledgement that the kind of prototypical model shape isn't necessarily the shape of regular people. And that is shown on fitcode.com. You have normal looking people of all sizes, both thin and not so thin.
Yeah. This is something that I'm pretty passionate about. So the main reason I founded FitCode was because I would be at these shoots and I was a size 27 and they'd have one other size 27 girl and they would try the jeans on us and whoever they fit, they would shoot in them. And I started realizing that, you know, we have to look beyond size. And this is it right here, is that you can have two girls the same size and the jeans look completely different on each of them. So how do we just take, you know, the size question out of the equation? And how do we just look at a woman's body shape and say, hey, we're not here to judge anything. Size is just a number. We don't care. Let's look at your body shape. Let's figure out what genes are going to really fit you and really flatter you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then I assume that there was some point where you had that aha moment, right? You're at Chili's afterwards, after a long day of shooting, and you're sitting there with a napkin and you're like, I think I have an idea here. I'm going to make an index number that's not like a big number doesn't mean a big person. I'm going to make a whole new way to size things. Was there a napkin? Were you there with a partner coming up with this idea?
Yeah, you know, there were mini napkins. So I think anyone that's created a product knows that it's never just one napkin. One napkin sets you on that path, but then you have so many iterations of your product. And there was the aha moment for me. And for me, it was a little different. It was not that I knew that we needed this product, because I knew we needed it. I knew this was a problem and I knew I had a very unique place to solve it from. But it was really that fear of, hey, if I don't do this, someone else is going to. And I'm passionate about solving for women. And so if I can be a woman solving for women, I understand the product. I understand all the things that go into denim and go into making denim look good. So I think I'm in a unique place to solve this. And, you know, I didn't want to miss out on that.
Mm-hmm. Are you a technical co-founder or a non-technical founder?
I'm a non-technical co-founder. So both my co-founder and I did not come from a technology background. One of the first people mm-hmm. I brought on, our board member, was technical, and he really helped me build out that technology side of our business, which is most of our business at this point.
Mm-hmm. And has that been something where you have to decide how technical you want to be, or do you have to consciously say, all right, I understand how this JavaScript works, but that's as far as I need to go because I'm going to focus on CEO stuff and not CTO stuff?
Yeah, you know, I think there's an interesting place. And I think anyone who's been the CEO or leadership in a company knows the difference between working on the business and working in the business. And I work in the business just enough mm-hmm. to make sure that we are going the direction that I know we need to go. But I'm a big, big fan of letting experts be experts. And I didn't mm-hmm. bring on my developers so that I could micromanage them, because I'm not qualified to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, the people who I bring mm-hmm. on in this company are people who I trust, and I trust that they're going to get the job done and get it done really well. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I was there trying to tell them what to do, then they're going to try to do it one way and they don't get to use their creativity. So I, you know, I'm really pretty hands off with my team, and I let them be creative and try to figure out the most agile and creative solutions to these problems.
Mm-hmm. So you express the vision and they can present to you, like you say, well, we could do it with a plugin, we could do it with JavaScript, we could do it on a backend integration. And then how do you make a decision about which of those things to do? Because you could have integrated a lot of this in a backend as web APIs.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I come from the business and the consumer point of view. So when they present me with all these issues, I always say, hey, let's bring it back to the customer. What does the customer want to use? I'm the consumer. Am I going to use this? If the answer is no, then let's pivot. Let's go in a different direction. And then the other thing that I really think of is, what is the marketplace calling for? So I'm the one that's out talking to these brands. I'm talking to these retailers, and I have to listen to what their pain points are. And so I bring that back to the team and I say, hey, you know, this solution you have is really technical and it's really, really cool, but it's not needed right now. So let's table it. Let's put it in the back burner and let's get these partners what they need right now and what their pain points are.
Mm-hmm. How far along were you before you started looking for investment? Did you have a minimally viable product, an MVP, or did you have the whole thing ready to go?
You know, it was really just an idea that I had when I went out and got investment. So we needed investment in order to build a product at all, because it was technical. Mm-hmm. And so I had to get investment basically from day two. So I talked to a lot of people about this idea. It was an interesting road for me because it was a very, very clear problem. So people could understand the problem, not only from the business perspective, but they also, it's personal for them. You know, whether you're a man or a woman, you understand how hard shopping online can be. And you get that. You get that, you know, we can make this easier. So for me, all I had to do is say, hey, this is a very, very big problem. Returns account for billions of dollars each year for retail companies. And, you know, we also understand how it is to be a consumer and how hard it is to shop online.
That is an interesting point. I mean, some people may be halfway into this podcast and wondering, like, why does this matter? Maybe they're not interested in fashion, or they're not interested in pants. I am, but they might. But now you just kind of crystallized it for me. Returns, right? You're buying a $80 pair of jeans or a $30 pair of jeans, and $6 to $8 of that may be shipping it. And if I have to ship it back, then a human has to open the box and deal with the box and make sure that the jeans are still sellable or appropriate. And if you have to throw those away, then you're losing money because all that money comes out of the profit for X number of other jeans. So it sounds like returns are the problem that you're solving here, as well as conversion.
Yeah. So the first thing we do is we want people to be comfortable shopping online. So we have to look at those conversion rates. Does this product work to get people to purchase? And then from there, of course, it's, are they returning less? So going into this, we know that women specifically shopping for denim online return over 50% of the jeans that they purchase. Mm-hmm. So how do we cut into that?
Seriously?
Over 50%.
50%?
Yes.
Oh, that's really bad. I've heard nightmare stories. I was actually at a party recently where someone was telling me how their spouse abused Zappos. Mm. And I felt really bad for Zappos. I was like, they buy 12 pairs of shoes and they send 10 back. I mean, that's really not cool.
No, it's really bad. But this is what these companies have to do in order to compete. So they have to offer these free returns and they have to, you know, basically be a try-on service. It's what they've turned into. And so, you know, just like your friend and her shoes, it's the same thing with denim. People will buy four pairs and return three and just, you know, keep the one that fits. So how do we cut into that? How do we get women to only buy two and know that those two are going to fit? And that's where Fit Code comes in.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're keeping metrics because you're saying that consumers are 3 to 4 times more likely to convert once they've got this Fit Code, they've internalized it, and they start shopping with that code rather than with their measurements.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's our biggest thing. So our partners want to sell more jeans. And so if we can get, you know, their customers to buy more jeans, that's the number one thing. And so the number one thing we report on is conversions. Mm-hmm. So just like you said, we've seen that with Fit Code, their customers are shopping at 3 to 4 times the rate. So a conversion rate in e-commerce, a standard conversion rate is 2%, meaning that 2% of people who go to a website like Nordstrom are going to actually purchase something. So how do we get that higher? Well, Fit Code does. So if we have a 3 to 4 times multiplier, that means they're shopping anywhere from 6 to 8% instead of 2%. And that's big dollars for these companies.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were a working model for 8 years plus, continue to be. You're a CEO now, but with all due respect, and I say this as someone who is not familiar with how modeling works, I think of modeling as being a singular thing. It's an individual thing. You're in the show. If you're, for example, walking model or a runway model rather, or if you are part of a campaign, you're not giving creative feedback on the campaign, I assume. But when you're a CEO, you're flipping that. You're in charge. You make the statements. You make the vision. How does 8 years of modeling experience as a singular individual translate into CEO type work?
You know, I think it was 8 years of being frustrated that I was hearing a problem that I knew I could solve and wasn't being asked to help.
Oh.
And that was a really, really powerful place for me to come from. So, you know, you talk to models and the one thing you'll hear over and over is that, you know, we're just considered a clothes hanger. And at the end of the day, we are. And that's fine.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Like that's the job we got into and you get paid for it.
I don't think it is fine, actually.
Well, it's not fine, but you know, that's...
doesn't sound fine.
You're not mistreated, but you're also not... you're not valued for your problem solving ability because that's not why they hired you.
Right.
They hired you to make clothes look good.
Right.
And so for 8 years, I listened to this problem and I looked and I'd listened to the retailers who are offset complaining about return rates and complaining about the state of the industry. And so for me, while modeling, you know, certainly wasn't business school, it was this really, really beautiful lesson in here's a problem that has dollars tied to it. I have a solution. And going into being a CEO from being a model, it was the coolest place because for years I had been criticized and critiqued on things I couldn't control, which was things, you know, like how you look and what your appearance is. And suddenly CEO, I could say, hey, anything that's, you know, going wrong in this product, I can change. I have the ability to change. And it was awesome. And it still is awesome to say, you know, anything that I'm being criticized for now, it's just on the product. And that means I'm not doing a good enough job listening to my customers or to my partners and all of those things I can change. So it's very, very empowering.
Mm-hmm. Where else did you pull your leadership kind of inspiration from? Because there's your experience as a model, which gives you the problem space, the understanding of the problem space. If I understand correctly, when I did research on you, were you in fact an NCAA athlete as well?
I was. I swam for the University of Washington. I was a varsity athlete there. And I think I got a lot of leadership from sports as well. So I was an athlete my entire life. I've never shied away from hard work, which I think is really important as a CEO and also as a CEO of a startup. But, you know, I value dedication. I value commitment. And I'm not afraid of little pain and having to grind. And that's what athletics taught me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting point you bring up. So people talk about, and there's a lot of discussion about this on Twitter, about the startup lifestyle. And, you know, if you don't put 110%, don't even bother showing up. And the idea of work-life balance and whether or not, you know, the grind is an appropriate thing. I'm assuming when you go and do startup lifestyle, you eat, live, breathe your company. But personal stuff also happens that can throw you for a loop in the middle of it and really change your perspective and your priorities.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the first year I think that Fit Code was live, I not only got married, but my mom also passed away from breast cancer. Mm. And it was this really tough time, but it was also a moment of clarity for me where, you know, you read about and you hear from other founders about how stressful and how hard startup life can be because it just has an immense amount of pressure. But mm-hmm. I did that in tandem with taking care of my sick mom. And I realized that every single stress I felt during working hours, that was a privilege because that's not real stress. That's a stress that's not happening to you. You've chosen it, right? I chose to be a founder. I chose to be the CEO of a startup. So therefore, I can't complain about these hours. I can't complain about the stress because these are choices. You know, what was happening to my mom was not a choice, and that's real stress. So having that perspective going into being a CEO of a startup was just invaluable for me. And, you know, I think about it almost every day as, hey, don't complain. You chose this. Anything that's happening right now, these are choices. And this is a really, really fun process and you have to embrace it.
That is a really interesting balance to find between the stresses that you chose, the stresses you did not, the privileges that you have, the privileges that you don't, and trying to be, you know, not necessarily responsible for everything that happens to you, but accountable for the things that happen to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's also just the perspective and understanding that that's never going to end. So, you know, going back to funding, you can get millions of dollars in funding and think that that's going to end your stress. But that just means that you're scaling your business. And with that comes more stress and more problems. So it's really about...
Well, and you have to pay that money back too.
Exactly. Like, you know, that's something, again, that I'm passionate about is investment is debt. And, you know, anyone that I hear that's going through different investment phases, I always remind them of that. Like, don't get addicted to the cash. This is debt. You know, be cash flow positive. Get addicted to the drive to be cash flow positive because that's where your power comes from. Don't forget that investment is still debt. So those stresses, all that kind of thing, it's just about perspective and realizing that they're always going to be there. You just have to learn to mitigate them and learn how to appreciate them.
Yeah. I think it's really easy to be an armchair quarterback and a person on Twitter saying, oh, wow, Ryan got $3 million in funding. She's probably driving a fancy car now. But wait a second, you have a dozen people working for you or more now. You have 100,000 users. I don't think that you just get like a big pile of gold coins, right, when you get your money.
No, absolutely not. And especially as, you know, founder, we all have choices of, you know, what salaries look like. And I've said all along that, you know, I pay my employees first. So they, you know, I have to pay them salaries because I have to keep them engaged and keep them committed. And while they love the project and they love the product, I have to support them and they all have families that they have to support. So I really come last when it comes to that. So anyone that thinks you can found a startup in your first few years, you know, be bringing home a lot of money, you're delusional because you're not. Hopefully the payoff is there in the end. But again, for me, it's never been about the money. It's been about making this experience better for customers. And if we do that, maybe there will be a payoff. But if not, then it has been an awesome, awesome ride.
Well, yeah, I certainly hope that you are successful in doing that. It's got to be overwhelming, though, to have this idea and have the... Well, hey, actually, let me back up. Let me ask you this. It's been 3 years now since you founded the company. Are you where you thought you'd be at 3 years, or did you know that this would be a multi-year long and not multi-month long ride?
That's a great question. No one's ever asked me that. I didn't know.
That makes me happy.
Yeah. I didn't know what to think. I didn't go to business school. I had never done this before. I also didn't do a lot of extensive reading on startups going into this. And I did that purposefully because just like I do with my team, I wanted to have the creativity to solve this problem the right way and not be constrained by the way other people have done things. So I had no idea where I should be at this point. If if I could go back, I think I'd be really, really proud of where we are now. You know, we're becoming a nationally recognized brand, which is awesome. We have incoming PR, which is awesome. We're integrating with some of the biggest denim brands in the country. So I don't think I could have dreamed that we would be where we are today, if not only because of the success we've had, but also the direction we've gone. So we have pivoted so many times because, like I said, we constantly are listening to what customers and partners need. So I couldn't have predicted that we'd be, you know, integrating right on partner websites using JavaScript and going to men's so soon. And then also just having this abundance of data that is really valuable for these partners. So I couldn't predict any of those things.
That's interesting. I didn't even realize that, that now that you're developing this data, the bigger that that database and that the more valuable that algorithm has, that will not only affect existing inventory and existing inventory of jeans, but potentially new manufacturing of clothing.
Absolutely. So this has been a byproduct of Fit Code, which, again, I didn't predict, but has been awesome, is that we suddenly have this customer data that these brands have never seen before. So if you think about the way that a denim brand makes jeans, they have a fit model come in. She's, you know, maybe 5'9", a size 27, and they make all their jeans off this one model. And so suddenly we can go to these brands and we say, hey, since we've integrated on your site, we now know by body shape exactly who your customer base is. We can break that down by percentage. So we know that 33% is this shape and another 20% is this shape. Let's start making your jeans to actually fit your customer. And we hold fit sessions with our partners where we bring real women in their real customer base body shape in, and they get to try those jeans on in the design process now. So we can say, hey, this jean's working, this jean's not. Let's increase your rise here or decrease the back rise here. And let's really make sure that we're aligning your denim for your customer base.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that demographic data in that way. This is data that really is going to improve people's lives. It's anonymized data. You don't have to worry about privacy concerns because it's really just a demographics of these are the people that are buying these jeans and you should make more of those. That's a fantastic bit of insight.
Exactly. It has just been awesome to be able to consult with our partners on that.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me, Ryan Buckley, the Fit Code co-founder and CEO.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's been a pleasure.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.